A Berlin Diary, Autumn 1930. From my window, the deep, solemn, massive street. Cellar shops where the lamps burn all day, under the shadow of top-heavy balconied facades. Dirty plaster frontages embossed with scrollwork and heraldic devices. The whole district is like this. Street leading into street of houses like shabby monumental safes, crammed with the tarnished valuables and second-hand furniture of a bankrupt middle class. I am a camera, with its shutter open, quite passive, recording, not thinking. Recording the man shaving at the window opposite, and the woman in the kimono washing her hair. Someday, all this will have to be developed, carefully printed, fixed. At 8 o'clock in the evening, the house doors will be locked. The children are having supper. The shops are shut. The electric sign is switched on over the night bell of the little hotel on the corner, where you can hire a room by the hour. And soon the whistling will begin. Young men are calling their girls. Standing down there in the cold, they whistle up at the lighted windows of warm rooms where the beds are already turned down for the night. They want to be let in. Their signals echo down the deep hollow street, lascivious and private and sad. Because of the whistling, I do not care to stay here in the evenings. It reminds me that I am in a foreign city, alone, far from home. Sometimes I determine not to listen to it, pick up a book, try to read. But soon a call is sure to sound, so piercing, so insistent, so despairingly human, that at last I have to get up and peep through the slats of the Venetian blind to make quite sure that it is not, as I know very well it could not possibly be, for me. The extraordinary smell in this room, when the stove is lighted and the window shut, not altogether unpleasant, a mixture of incense and stale buns. The tall tiled stove, gorgeously coloured like an altar. The washstand like a Gothic shrine. The cupboard also is Gothic, with carved cathedral windows. Bismarck faces the King of Prussia in stained glass. My best chair would do for a bishop's throne. In the corner, three sham medieval halberds, from a theatrical touring company, are fastened together to form a hatstand. Fräulein Schröder unscrews the heads of the halberds and polishes them from time to time. They are heavy and sharp enough to kill. Everything in the room is like that, unnecessarily solid, abnormally heavy, and dangerously sharp. Here, at the writing table, I am confronted by a phalanx of metal objects, a pair of candlesticks shaped like entwined serpents, an ashtray from which emerges the head of a crocodile, a paper knife copied from a Florentine dagger, a brass dolphin holding on the end of its tail a small broken clock. What becomes of such things? How could they ever be destroyed? They will probably remain intact for thousands of years. People will treasure them in museums. Or perhaps they will merely be melted down for munitions in a war. Every morning, Fräulein Schröder arranges them very carefully in certain unvarying positions. There they stand, like an uncompromising statement of her views on capital and society, religion and sex. All day long she goes padding about the large, dingy flat. Shapeless but alert, she waddles from room to room in carpet slippers and a flowered dressing gown pinned ingeniously together so that not an inch of petticoat or bodice is to be seen, flicking with her duster, peeping, spying, poking her short pointed nose into the cupboards and luggage of her lodgers. She has dark, bright, inquisitive eyes and pretty waved brown hair, of which she is proud. She must be about 55 years old. Long ago, before the war and the